and I started running. I suppose I didn't stop, and when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going, so I opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because like I'm heartbroken.
All right, you're welcome along to the CER. This is the Hurling Show. Conal and Damien are here as usual on a Thursday. Lads, it's a sad way to start the show, because there's been awful news coming out of Galway that hurling legend Tony Keady has passed away. He's only 53 years of age, and it's really, really shocking. It must be for everyone that knows Tony and everyone in the GAA, because he was in good health and he was at the matches in Croke Park on Sunday. I saw Cyril Farrell talking about meeting him, and he was in great form and stuff like that, which makes it even more shocking for someone so young, Conor.
Yeah, it's terrible. I couldn't believe it when I heard on the radio this morning. He would have been one of the key members of that Galway team at the time, and you know, loads of rumours around him that he was a little bit different all the time, and you know, and stuff to read about. Even Cyril Farrell coming out this morning saying, you know, when he was going to Croke Park, he thought that the 60,000 or 70,000 there were just to watch him play alone. Yeah. You know, so. Look, I remember watching all the videos and watching the games, even though I was like 6 or 7. I was usually following Galway at the time, and he was one of the main men, and it's terrible news. At 53, I can't believe it.
Yeah, no, it's terrible. Damien, you must have known him well.
No, I did know him well, actually, to be honest. So it's very, very sad day today down here in Galway. So it's very, very sad day for the GAA, you know, to lose such a legend like Tony Keady. But yeah, we did know him well. His sister lived beside us, so she was Teresa, and he actually, in our younger days, when we were only young lads, Tony started up his own business making hurleys. So he did, and he was making them from the back of his sister's house in their workshop. And it's like, and when you were a young lad, you had Tony Keady down the road making hurls. You were going up to Tony getting the hurls, and myself and my brother Keith, Lord Merson, now he's in heaven as well. So there's two great legends in heaven now between Keith and Tony. So it is, but we're going down getting your hurls, and he's putting the grip on the hurls. And he was a great character, you know. And it's like, and when you're young, and a man was after winning all Ireland medals, making your hurl and putting grips on it. If he told you it was a nice hurl, it was a nice hurl, and that was it, you know. But just a nice fella. My dad sold him a car in his day, so he did as well. But one of the great characters. And it is a sad day, to be honest, just to have such an icon of the game gone. And he was a great storyteller, Colin. When he was telling the story, he'd put a twist into it, or he'd put some bit of a turn into the story to make it even more interesting. But just a great character and an all-around nice guy as well.
Yeah, well, the talk is that he was a real free spirit, you know. He liked to do his own thing. Some brilliant stories that you hear about him, and like the best one I've heard, because listen, we all love a free spirit. He won man of the match in the 88 All-Ireland final, and he went to a pub in Phibsborough after the game, and he didn't make it to the banquet. So like, he was called out as man of the match in the All-Ireland final, and he's watching the banquet from a pub in Phibsborough with, I think it was, Brendan Linsky. Yeah. Like, that stuff is absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, basically what happened there was he went down with him in 7 minutes, and they met up with their friends or whatever. Next thing, I suppose they were having a great time and never bothered going back to the banquet. The next thing, man of the match was announced, and it was Tony Keady. So there was no Tony Keady to collect the award. So Cyril Farrell went up to collect the award from him, and they basically said to him, you know, where is Tony? And he says, oh, he says, Tony, he's already getting ready for next year. He says he's got back, he's just getting ready for next year, which was a great answer as well. You know, he's getting ready. So it's sad, you know. He was a great character. He was a great man from Clima Daly. So he was. It's a hard day for great hurling supporters, and very sad, 53 years of age. So all our thoughts and prayers are with his family, you know, and all that today. And just a sad day, Colin, for Galway hurling.
Yeah, you wouldn't really get that these days, Conal, where someone might chance they can go up a few pints up the road and not make the banquet. But I think, like, I mean, geez, I don't want to get nostalgic about the times gone by, but like, I mean, that kind of stuff, like, that's what legends are made of. Like, I know on the field he was a legend. Little things like that, you know, doing your own thing. I don't know
Yeah, well, it's yes. Nowadays, you need to toe a line, I suppose, and managers are controlling everything that happens. And I was trying to think, how would you even go about doing that? You know, after you win, you know, I know everyone maybe goes for a couple of pints before.
I'd say it wasn't planned. You know, I'd say it was like, let's go up here for one or two, and just the crack took hold.
Obviously,
and
no mobile phones or social yeah. media or anything, because it would have went absolute viral. But imagine it happened after all these days. But yeah. No, just something of legends, and just stories like that are great to hear.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. The big controversy, I suppose, about Tony was 1989, Damien. And, like, I mean, everybody knows this story at this stage, that he was banned for the All-Ireland semi-final against Tipperary for playing out in America. So the story went, and of course this is Tony being a free spirit again, you know, just kind of doing his own thing, brilliant on the field, but like he wanted to travel and he went out to the All-Star trip in America with the 1988 team. His brother was living out there, so he ended up staying out there with his brother for a while and ended up playing a match out there under, I think it was his brother's name, and ends up getting caught. I wouldn't mind, I heard him saying that they ended up winning that game by 15 points. He wasn't even needed, really. But, like, I mean, he ended up missing that tip game, and a lot of people put that loss down to that.
Yeah, well, he told that whole story himself on Laker Gale side.
Yeah.
And basically, as you said there, he was over in America, so he was mixing. They were wondering, would he play? And the way he told the story himself was that he had no intention of playing until he seen the Tipperary jersey running out the tunnel. And when he seen the Tipperary jersey running out the tunnel, he went into the dressing room. He says, give me my gear. He says, I'll go, because he seen me hated the Tipperary colours. So he did. But he got suspended that time, and it was known as the Keady affair. And I remember him saying himself that when he came back that he was suspended, and he said that when he was going around himself was saying his own personal time, that there was photographers following him and cameras following him and taking pictures of him, and these photos were ending up on the Sunday World. And he said, like, what all he did was he played a hurling match in America. He didn't shoot anyone or he didn't kill anyone at the time.
Yeah,
like that. It was, he just said, like, it was absolutely hilarious the way the media went on. But he didn't like Tipperary. That's one thing for certain. And but he just said the way the media went on that time was just, he said it was completely over the top. He said, and all he did was play a hurling match. So then I remember telling that story. If anyone didn't ever see it, to look it up on Laker Gale. It was a brilliant story, because I remember they showed a picture of him then after coming back after a year of the suspension, and he was carrying weight. So he was, and they took the jersey off and everything. So it's just hilarious. Just a great character overall. Just brilliant character, legend
yeah.
from Galway.
Conal's smiling here when he hears he hated Tipperary. He could have a lot in common.
No. I was just smiling. Like, I think he was the only player to get suspended for actually playing in the States, was he?
Could have been. Well, maybe did they change it after that then?
I think they might have, yeah. But then, in actual fact, when they went to the vote, which was the biggest thing, like, the Tipperary delegates backed him to play, and it was his own counties in Connacht that went against him, which is just hard to believe. But that's the infighting, I suppose, that goes on down
yeah.
there.
Yeah. Just want to briefly talk back, lads, what your memories of, like, Damien, obviously, I'll start with you, because, like, this is four successive All-Irelands, 85, 86, 87, 88, lost the first two and won the next two, and then lost to Tipperary, which was a great kind of coming team as well. Do you have much memory of that, Damien, or would you have been too young?
Of Galway winning the All-Ireland back in 87,
yeah, of that period, 85 to 89, or 85 to 88.
You would, of course. Yeah, you remember, like you would say, speaking of the team or speaking of Tony?
Both.
But yeah, well, remember Tony. The one thing I always remember about Tony Keely was they'd be poking balls down on top of him and he'd be just reversing back and catching balls. And he'd be driving out the field with, and lads hitting them shoulders, and he was such a strong man, and he was able to dominate the number six channel, no problem. And then he coming up the field jogging and standing over these long range frees and driving over the bar. Like, that era of Galway players was just incredible. Like, you think of the players that were playing at that time: Tony Keady, Joe Cooney, Pete Finnerty, Sylvia Nan, their captain Conor Hayes, Brendan Linsky, Hopper McGrath, Brendan Nocton, all these lads, they were all just Michael Coleman icons. That's what they are, absolute legends. And then you had characters, and one of the biggest characters in the whole lot was Keady. And we've all heard the stories, and all the I'd say the crack that him had after winning All-Ireland and playing in All-Ireland was just incredible. say the drinking sessions and the bonding sessions that them lads had was unbelievable. But yeah, I can remember, and sure, even when you got a bit older, you'd watch the matches back, Colm, and enjoy them. That's what you did. But yeah, possibly if I was to say something, that group of players possibly should have won more. You know, being honest, I they only won two All Ireland. They were capable of winning more than they were. But they're a brilliant team.
I think usually, Conal, when people think about that Galway team, I know Damien's listed out so many players there, but it's the half-back line of Finnerty, Keady and McInerney. Like, I mean, any good team, great team, I don't care, and it's just football and hurling, you have a great half-back line. You've got a great, you know what I mean, a dominating half-back line. It's so important. And like, I mean, look at that for a half-back line. Like, yeah, it's sensational.
Yeah, no, that half-back line didn't change a whole lot over those period of time, which showed that the quality that they had. And yeah, look, I think Damien said it, the characters that they had, they must have had such fun, because they were all nearly, nowadays nearly everyone's the same and everyone's categorised, but those lads seem to be, you know, their own character, they're all different, you know, but yet seem to play so well together. Like, you know, you see and Michael Cohen, Justin Campbell, you know, Hopper McGrath, a whole lot of them, all different styles, but yet all seem to gel well together and get the most out of each other, and they were definitely well able to look after themselves. You know, there was no holding back in any position, as well as able to hurl. So yeah, it was great. It's great to watch them, and I do remember all those battles with Tipperary, and they seemed to have a huge rivalry and a huge hatred for each other, which was great to see then.
Yeah, you need those rivalries. One more story there, Damien, before
Colm. Yeah, Colm, I remember Conor Hayes told me this story when he was speaking of that great team and the great characters. But Conor Hayes told us this story before some All-Ireland, then it's Thorin Farrell brought him some masseuse, so he did say, give the lads, you know, a rub down, and so just come up to the All-Ireland, and the Sylvan and Anne went in and said, he was getting a rub on his calves, but he had a fear sore calf, and so next thing he got with the bed, so next thing this girl was rubbing his calf, and I spent about 10 or 15 minutes rubbing the calf, and next thing he says, now that you should be okay there now, Sylvie, and he goes, oh geez, that was lovely, he says, but the other calf is sore. You know, and you know, but these are all the great stories about them characters, and like you're speaking of Lord Mercy and Tony, which we all have brilliant stories on, but like, you know, teams are built by character and by bonding sessions and crack and morale and all that, and like that team went through All Ireland, and it was a great, you know, there's so many great stories to be told about all them players, which is nice to hear now, you know.
Yeah, and I think even what you're saying, Conal, about Tony Keady, that just that thing alone of what Cyril Farrell said about him, that you go to Croke Park and there's 70,000 and you think that 70,000 is there to watch you. Like, that's a great attitude. Like, I mean, these are fellas that think like that don't freeze on the big day. They want that big day, whereas other players might shrivel. Like, Tony Keady never did, because that was just his attitude. He was carefree and he just loved that kind of thing, and he had the reputation that would do it on the big day for Galway.
Yeah, it seemed to be. I think if you watch any of the videos, any of the big games, the semi-finals or the finals, he always produced the goods. He never would say that Tony Keady was only average today or he played poorly. But yeah, look, it's great. Not too many people have that attitude that, you know, they train all year and when they get to the big day, they go, let me out here, let me show exactly what I have, because there's so many people here to see me. And, you know, when that quality comes along, it can be really, really good if it's done right. But yeah, it is a sad day to see someone so young.
Yeah, he's only one of three ever Player of the Year, Hurler of the Year awards in Galway. So he won it in 1988. Who were the other two, Damien?
Joe Cooney won it in
87.
John Connolly.
Joe Connolly, Joe Connolly in 1980. So nobody's won it since. So I think Joe Canning is actually favourite to win it this year. So I don't know, maybe the stars are aligned for that to happen. But anyways, listen, condolences to the Keady family, and I'm sure the same is for the whole GA community. He was a real legend and he'd be badly missed. Right, we'll be back in a second and we'll have a look at the All-Ireland semi-final.
Let's chill the beans. There still is a lot of work to be done yet. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans. But I tell you, give us a year and a bit. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans. Let's chill the beans. 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 Let's chill the beans. Let's chill the beans. 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 Let's chill the beans. There still is a lot of work to be done yet. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans. But I tell you, give us a year, year and a bit. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans.
Yeah, lads, Cork and Waterford at the weekend, and obviously this and All-Ireland semi-final, we don't get this all that often between two teams that have played each other only two games ago for Waterford.
2 months ago, yeah.
Only 2 months ago. So, like, I mean, you're going into a game, Cork, psychologically, we've already beaten them. Waterford, we need revenge on these lads. You know, you'd almost argue that Waterford are arguably in a better position going into this game than Cork.
Yeah, it is. It is strange, and I suppose for the two teams, they probably both fancy each other. They wouldn't fear each other. They play each other so often, and to be in an All Ireland semi final, playing each other and know each other so well, a lot will come down to the tactical battle on the day. But I think, you know, in Croke Park, it'll probably have an effect too. Like, a lot of these Cork lads haven't played there in a long while. You know, there's a lot of newcomers on the team. While Waterford probably have been there, you know, a couple of years, had a couple of games, and it's pretty much the same Cork Waterford team. So will that stand to them? Look, you're just trying to pick at anything now at all between the two, because there's not going to be a whole lot, I don't think, between the two teams on the weekend.
Yeah, who'll have learned more from that last game, Damien?
Oh, the Waterford will have to have learned more. Yeah. And I think they did, and I think even Derek McGrath, I think you said yourself, wasn't, especially when they got beaten by Cork, wasn't as media friendly. Was there, and you know what, there's a bit of cut to him, and I just see him on the sideline. He's getting his messages across, and he's a little bit crosser, and he's a little bit bolder, and all that sort of stuff. So he'd have driven that into the players, and the players would have had to have looked at themselves from Offa as well, over to the defeat to Cork, and said to themselves, like, we're now, they got a lovely draw afterwards, and they got Offaly, you know, which got them back up and down horse again, and lads had clock up scores like Austin Peace, I think, scored 6 points in play that day. But like, you would say to yourself, who got more out of losing? It was definitely Waterford, where they kick-started their season. They're now back in the semi-final. But then Cork went on and won a Munster Championship, which is always something that they love winning down in Munster. The Munster medal, which is held so high. But you're wondering who will have learned more. I'd say possibly Waterford will have learned a little bit more, for they've played a few more games.
Yeah, the whole talk after that game was Waterford played a little bit more orthodox than they usually do. After that game, they're back.
Yeah.
Forget about that. That didn't work against Cork. They were, like, uncharacteristically flat that day. Now, they had an 11-week break. Remember, we were talking about that. But they've gone back to the Waterford, the more defensive Waterford that we were used to the couple of years. And, like, I mean, once bitten, twice shy. I think it's very obvious what we're going to see from Waterford this weekend.
Yeah, no, I think they're going to go back to what they did before, and has stood them well so far, you know, and all the results that they've got since that defeat. But the only thing, you know, if you look at the Cork team that's probably going to play, the average age is around 20 years of age. You know, those young lads that are coming in, okay, they've played very well this year, and you can't doubt any of the players that they have. Like, you know, you have Coleman, you've Kingston, Mead, Spillane, the whole lot of them have done really, really well.
That's the average age of the five newcomers is 20.
Yeah. So you have to say that this is a huge game for this new Cork team coming into Croke Park on a full house. Will it affect them?
Favourites too.
And you know, when Cork are favourites, you know, they think that they're world beaters, that nobody can touch them, and they have been so far, and they've done really well. But, you know, coming up against a Waterford team that, you know, have come through a lot of tough challenges in the last couple of weeks, will the occasion get to Cork, especially the young lads? You would like to think no, but you know, an All-Ireland semi-final is a different occasion than what you're used to down in Munster. And coming to Croke Park, there's an awful lot of things that are different. You know, the journey up, are they going to stay up at night, are they going to travel up, supporters on about, you know, tickets, supporters on about everything, that they're going to win the All-Ireland, and it's tough to deal with a lot of that. So it'll be interesting to see how especially the young lads do get on.
And it will be interesting to see that they won't, like, they've played Waterford already, but they haven't played the Waterford that they're going to play on Sunday. Isn't that a weird one? It's almost like they haven't played this team before, because Waterford are not going to play the same as last day, and they played against Tipperary and Munster, they played against Waterford and Clare. They might have dropped Galvin back, but they played with five Orthodox forwards. They won't have played with a congested middle third and someone standing in front of Cadogan and Harnedy and Patrick Horgan. They won't have contended with that before, so it's almost like it's a new opponent.
Yeah, it will be, and it'll be a totally different Waterford team that they're going to face. They're not, as you said, they're going to be in trees and forwards, they're going to be tackling everywhere, they're not going to be doing these nice runs they were doing across the line without someone hitting them or someone getting a hand on them, which is going to be difficult. But look, you'd have to say that this Cork team, you know, if they can produce the goods and if they can run this Waterford team around the place like they have been doing, and if Nash continues this puck out that he's been doing and hitting the half forward line as easy as it has been, because every team is trying to counteract it, but they haven't done it yet. You'd say on that maybe Cork are a little bit favourites coming into it, but look, I don't know. I think this Waterford team are primed this year. They've learned so much, especially from that defeat, and the game plan that they're going to have is going to be savage. It's going to be savage, every single one of those Cork players, as soon as they get near the ball in twos and threes, and really out physically and outwork them. Because I think if you read one of the quotes that Kingston came out with after one of the league games against Kilkenny, he said that we were beaten today. They were beaten by Limerick and Kilkenny, and after Kilkenny, he said they were beaten because they were physically overpowered and their work rate wasn't there, and they didn't have enough intensity. Okay, they might have learned from that, but they probably haven't come up against a Waterford team that a team that are going to be so physical like Waterford are going to bring on the weekend.
Yeah, if we're in any doubt about how Waterford are going to set up at the weekend, here's a quote from Dan Shanahan: if it's 8 points to 7 with 10 sweepers, we'll take it. We played two unbelievable semi-finals against Kilkenny last year, and what was the end result? We were beaten. We've worked hard to get there. The lads know that too. They're an intelligent bunch. So, like, I mean, just reading obviously from those quotes, Damien, they're going to go back to the Waterford, the suffocating Waterford. Now, I'd also argue that it wasn't their style of play that lost against Kilkenny. They were 5 points up with 7 or 8 minutes to go playing, kind of attacking, you know. But because they didn't win that game, I think it's fairly obvious what way they're going to go this weekend.
Well, they went with the Orthodox, as you said, against Cork 2 months ago, and it didn't work. They went back to brass tacks, they went back to their old system with a sweeper, and they've been winning. So they're not going to change for this one in Croke Park against Cork in an All-Ireland semi-final. What I would say is, for Waterford are going to stick to the exact same system. They're going to have the brick, they're going to have Kevin Moran, and they're going to try get these boys onto the ball as much. Pádraig Mahoney is going to be, once again, as I said before on the show, a big massive game in him regarding free taking, and then they need their marquee players, the Austin Gleesons and all these lads, right? But for Cork, the biggest, most important player for Cork the next year is going to be their sweeper. So who Cork are going to give that individual role to? Because it's going to be five forwards against six backs. Who will leave the sweeper? I probably suspect that they'll put Ellis will be their sweeper, or maybe even your Matt Coleman, right? So that's, and as you said, it's going to be a massive game. It's going to be work rate, it's going to be intensity, it's going to be all that stuff. But for Cork, the biggest player that they will have to put in place is their sweeper to counteract and put attacking balls. And the other thing then is, Coleman's right there. There won't be as much room of, you know, going over and back in the full forward line for the lads, but there'll be a lot more pressure. But then we all have to ask the question: what is the story going to be with De Borca? Yeah. If De Borca doesn't get across the line and win his appeal, which I hope he does, I want to go on record saying I hope he does. I want to see De Borca playing for Waterford in All Ireland City Final, and furthermore, I think that's not helpful, right? But if he's not playing and he loses his appeal, who is Waterford going to appoint their new role as the sweeper, and how will that person adapt where De Borca has adapted to this role for 4 years?
Yeah,
he knows the role inside out, and plus the players know the outlet ball goes to De Borca, so who will they put in place for that? So it will be interesting in that regard as well.
That is interesting, because Waterford the last day lined out with Dara Fives picked as a forward, but he goes back and marks De Borca's man, and De Borca then drops probably as a sweeper. So, like, you'd imagine Dara Fives is the natural replacement if De Borca doesn't make it. But what forward do they bring back then to play? You know what I mean? They're going to have to pick another defender to play in the forwards maybe. Or does Morris get back in instead of Dara? And see, they don't that probably wouldn't suit them as much. You know, there is a bit of...
They're not going to put in Morris in it because Morris is impact sub, and Morris is a big player for them, especially in the last 20 minutes. As we said before, he's a crowd pleaser as well, and he changes the whole tone of the crowd there. So I'd say Morris even knows himself, going back to playing on the Tuesday night for the All-Ireland semi-final, that he wouldn't be starting in an All-Ireland semi-final. If he does, I'd be surprised, because he's their impact. And he and also I find as well, when Morris goes to full forward, it's also like letting the squad know we can change our style of play. We can hit route 1 to 14 because Morris is inside and he'll hold it up and hopefully he'll catch it and lads can run in. It's kind of letting them, the players as well around know that we can change the style slightly. So I don't think Morris will be failing at us on Sunday.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. It does change the style, and also in the last whatever 15 minutes when he comes on, it relieves the pressure that they don't have to do that running game so much. You know, it's easier just to let the ball go, so your shape is kind of held at the back.
Yeah.
But I think a lot has been talked about Gleeson coming into it, but I think because the game is going to be so tight, his decision making is going to be vital. You know, I don't think he can afford to have. I think he had maybe he had four wides in Kilkenny in the drawn game in the last 10 minutes, which is criminal, like, really, you know. And look, I'm not questioning him at all as a player. He's immense. He's one of the best hurlers probably playing the game at the minute. But maybe sometimes he just needs to, you know, hold back on having so many of the pot shots, especially in the latter stages in the championship like this. You know, maybe the best thing is to give the ball in or give a pass rather than have a shot himself from 6 or 7 yards. And when they do go over, it's fantastic.
But yeah,
you can't. It'll come down to 2 or 3 points, and you know he's going to get his chances. And how we can take those opportunities, whether giving a pass to someone else or taking the scores, it'll come down to the finer things, and that'll be one of the areas where Waterford need to improve on.
Do you know a stat I read from about Gleeson in the Irish Times today? It was that he's only caught one puck out contested. Like, we're not talking about one he might go short for or something like that. I don't know, is that a reflection on Waterford's puck out strategy, or is he just not, because he's such an unbelievably natural fetcher, you know, he can do that. Or maybe he's not in the right positions of the field. But I thought it was a strange one in the championship. He's only caught one contested puck out.
Yeah, no, it is. It's a funny stat. You wouldn't think it. When you think of Austin Gleeson this year's championship, you probably would think of it that he's catching an awful lot of ball. But he's a marked man no matter where he goes now, and people don't want him to catch it. Like, so they're doing what they can to, as we talked about before, you know, they're getting on his catching hand, they're hassling and harrying him, and so he's not putting the hand up. And if the ball breaks, well, you know, the other teams reckon that's fair advantage. We'll work away to get the ball on the ground. But I think it'll come down to the small things, and Derek McGrann needs to be having a chat with him now, saying, look, you know, maybe for the last 15 minutes or whatever, let's play the percentages inside, let's hit Morris if he's on, let's hit whoever's on form, instead of having the shots from 6 or 70 yards from the sideline like Canning did the last 8, because they don't always go over, and it's very disheartening for the crowd, and it's very disheartening for the team when they do go wide, when you really need the scores and there's other options there.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about that. Damien, what about Nash's puckouts? Because obviously they've been going so well in Munster. Clare did something that I remember before the Waterford game thinking Waterford might do, is that they almost conceded the puck out to the corner backs and they dropped back a little bit, but they ended up putting themselves under a lot of pressure. But is there something in that tactic to, instead of letting them pick somebody out, let the corner back have to pick someone out? Or are you losing like 20 yards and it's dropping on right on the edge of your square rather than on your half back line? Like, is that a silly thing to do, or is that an option for them?
I think that Nash will mix it up. I think Nash is a top class goalkeeper, and he's huge experience now as well. I think he'll go short in odd time, and I think he'll also pinpoint them. But obviously enough, this day, this game as opposed to last one, you'll have a lot more traffic to try to bypass or whatever. But I think Nash will still find his men with the ball. So he's a very, very good player. Simple as that. So he's, and he's an odd one short. So he's, and that's what, and next thing the Waterford players, that's what the Waterford players will drop back. He won't have both options to hit both cornerbacks. So he will do it in that time and see. Maybe Cork being the Q tours that they are, you know, they'll have devised a plan to what does the cornerback do with the ball when he gets it. So, but yeah, it's a different Waterford team.
he'll be playing against in the one that they did 2 months ago. And but Nash is a big role. He's a big player for Cork. He sets the tone with his book out, so he does, and his role on Sunday will be vital.
Yeah, I found it strange in the Clare game that they did concede and let the full-back line get the ball and maybe run a couple of yards and then launch it in on top of O'Hanley inside. Like, as a manager, I would have looked at it and said, like, get the ball into the danger zone, anything can happen. But why are you inviting that on you? You know, why are you letting the team hit the ball straight down on top of the square, even though you might have an extra man there? All it takes, you know, is, say, 1 in 5 for him to catch the ball and bury it. I would rather, you know, push up a slight little bit. Don't let them run out. If they're going to hit it, they're going to hit it from right in the corner.
Right.
So if Nash is going to hit it, he's going to poke it right deep into the corner back, and no cornerback really wants the ball. So put him under a little bit of pressure. Don't give him the chance to you know, to miss it and pick it up and have a look up and then strike it, because he's going to do, every cornerback now is well able to hit the ball. It's not like at maybe club level where you would be kind of struggling as a cornerback to hit the ball 60 or 70 yards. But at Intercounty, these lads are going to be dropping it down right on top of the square. And as a manager, for me, I wouldn't certainly like a ball being pumped in on top of my full back line every single time, because you might win, you know, 60 or 70% of them, but there's going to be one or two chances that are going to pop out and it's going to break to someone. And the pace that this Cork full forward line have, and even in the half forward line, you know, anything can happen, and it's too dangerous for me to rely on.
I think I agree with you, because remember the Munster final against Tipp, when Tipp had the wind, yeah, and the actual Gleeson was able to get that length on it, and Waterford didn't defend those ones too well. You know, landing that close to goal, you only need one to break your way, you know, and you're within a shot of the goal. So Clare definitely got it wrong a little bit, but maybe if you goad them into going to it and then run down to close them down, you know, it, maybe something like that is the answer.
Yeah, like you kind of have to you have to split them in, like you can't just, you know, track back as Waterford, you know, have been doing, track back nearly to your half forward line and leave two men inside where they can either hit the ball themselves or alternatively then nearly give it back to Nash, and he takes in a couple of yards and then he's absolutely launching it down right on top of them. So I think it's a dangerous tactic, and I'd be very surprised if Cork or if Waterford let that happen on the weekend,
yeah,
knowing what Nash can do.
Who actually, just to go back to the point of the Cork sweeper, who will they leave free? I think Coleman is tailor made to be the free man. He's so clever and he uses the ball so well that maybe leaving him as a spare man would be a huge weapon for Cork. Or is he doing so well on that left hand side and dominates it that might be messing him up a little bit?
Well, I think the way he's been playing, you know, he's been absolutely exceptional the way he's been playing at wing back, and to maybe give him that free role, it might just change and take too much
little
from his
bit
game
maybe for his age as well.
Yeah,
just
exactly. So if I would leave him there, let him play his game. He's only very young, coming into a big game. Just let him do what he does, and he seems to be doing very well so far.
Yeah. Okay. And would you agree with that, Damien? It's either Ellis or Coleman, probably, by the looks of things.
Yeah, either going to be one of them two. I'd probably Ellis. Would be he's done a bit of sweeping already, so he has kind of this season, so he has, you know, especially against Tipperary, you know, when Breen was kind of out the field, he stayed back in Kelly's position, so he does. I'd say they'll go with Ellis, but I wouldn't be surprised, and it has often happened, right, that Cork will want to leave someone like McDonald as their sweeper, so they might push up on different lads and leave him because he might be the greatest striker of a ball at times. So, you know, that's where Derek McGrath has to use tactics as well and try maybe push up on 5 of Cork defenders and leave the man that they want loose and see what would happen. But, yeah, I would put Ellis as the sweeper.
Right, well, one thing we know for sure, Conal, is that Spillane is going to mark Gleeson, because he did so well on him the last time. Yeah. But we were talking the last day, Gleeson started in the corner and drifted all over the field, and he was being man-marked all over the field. Gleeson will hold the centre-half forward position, you'd imagine, a good bit on Sunday. So Spillane's going to find himself centre-half back, you know, so it's a new area of the field for Spillane, with Gleeson in a position where he can kind of, you know, make runs from, rather than this kind of idea that you're drifting all over the place and you're kind of in no man's land some of the time.
Yeah, but I would think for the attitude Spillane would have, it doesn't matter what position he's in. If he's given the job to Markham, you know, you're good enough, you've done it before, so there's no problem. It doesn't matter if you're centre-back, you know, you're well able to hurl. That's the kind of attitude you need to be taking. And if you find that Leeson is swapping around, you know, if he's going wing forward, if he's going back inside, or if he's going to midfield, well, then you know you have him. You know, he wants to get away from you. So, you know, let's keep that in mind, and wherever he goes, just keep following him, because he doesn't want to be man-marked. He doesn't want you to be at him all the time, and take it as a bit of confidence that if he starts roaming around, well then yeah, that's the first step to getting on top of him on the day.
Yeah, the big criticism of Waterford the last day, we've talked a lot about Waterford, we'll go on to Cork in a minute, is that I remember Ken McGrath saying, I think it was on the Sunday game, is that they had no leaders, they were leaderless all over the field. Against Wexford anyways, Michael Brick Walsh stood up anyways. He had an unbelievable first 15 minutes, Damien, and he really set the tone for Waterford. And now I know Kevin Moran played brilliantly that day as well. For all the young talent Waterford have, they still rely on those two fellas to set the tone. Like Michael Brick Walsh is the longest serving player, one of the three longest. He started in 04. He's been involved in those legendary games with Cork. Like, I mean, he's operated on a level, you know, that's kind of probably higher than what he's going to see on Sunday. So he needs to start this game really, really well, and the young lads respond to that.
You know, well, as you said, Michael Brick Walsh and Kevin Moran are their leaders, without doubt, and they showed us last day against Wexford. So the Brick, you know, as you said, he's been doing it for years. He uses his intelligence and he uses his own qualities and strengths to suit him. Like, that, he hasn't the greatest legs, he's not going to win a 100 metre sprint, but he's strong, he's able to win the ball, he's a great ball winner. So he's, and when he gets fumbled up a bit, right, he's able to manufacture a free where he gets your man all over him and he swings the arm and he man falls on top of him and he wins the free and everything, you know. So like, all these Waterford young lads, yeah, they need the leaders, and I can only imagine the way he'd be talking to them during the game, telling them to stay coming. And when he gets a little bit tired, the Brick, they often put him in at the edge of the square, and when he was in at the edge of the square, he scored a goal. So yeah, he's starting to maybe take a few more shots as well, but his big absolute is this one-handed stick pass out to lads that are free, and he gives great hand passes out, you know, and he's their leader. And then you got Kevin Moore. And Kevin Moore was unbelievable the last day. Jeez, the first point he got where he just flicked off the hurl and over the bar, and then he scored a goal. These are their leaders. So it's like anything, on the day when it comes to a big game match, All-Ireland semi-final, you need your leaders to back up. And the Water will definitely need them two boys in particular to set the tone and get the rest of them going. The young lads will follow suit, so they will, you know, but the two boys, they need to have big games. And I don't see why they can't have been some servants to Water hurling, so they are no better men than they are. But yeah, they're the main leaders on this Water team.
Have you been around the Brick on the field, Conal? Is he a kind of a talker, or is he just a lead by example type fella?
Well, he's like most lads that, you know, they're winners. I remember he was marking me in a couple of games, and you know, no matter what I did, he just kept giving me slaps whenever I went, you know, and you were getting to the stage, you know, I would have been always loved to go and catch the ball. And even before Harley the ball was in midair, he started hitting me, like,
hitting you with the butt of the hurl, or just giving you a dig in the back, or
bit of everything. you mentioned it, he could do it,
really,
you know?
I didn't have him down as that.
I'm not saying
of,
he's a dirty hurler, but yeah, that's the way he operated, and he didn't take any prisoners, and he loved the fact that he'd get on top of you and physically get on top of you as well. And there's nothing worse than, you know, you trying to win possession and you might win it, and he's physically at you and you lose possession, and he nearly, when the ball goes to the ground, he seems to be really, really hard to get the ball, because, you know, he gets his arse around it and he's well able to pick it up in one handed, as we've seen, and give the ball off to someone. And he certainly lets you know when he does that, and there's nothing worse than that. You know, it's really disheartening when I would have thought that, you know, it'd be very hard for someone to outmuscle me, but, you know, every time we came up against each other, he seemed to always seem to dominate in the air and physically. So he has definitely changed his game, the way he's played since he's been in the last maybe 5 or 6 years.
Well, he started out as centre back, didn't he?
Yeah,
that's
he was
where
incredible.
He was,
yeah. Yeah, he was incredible back there. And since he's moved into the fours, and it's a great credit that he's able to change his game. And as Damien said, he is the master now of getting the ball into his hand and giving it off to someone, you know, one handed pass. And it is a hard skill to do, because he seems to attract, you know, so many three or four opponents to him all the time, and yet he gives it to lad in space, and he doesn't always get the credit he deserves on this Waterford team. You know, he doesn't get the fancy scores, or he did the last day, but not so much anymore. But like, those kind of players are invaluable in a squad that will actually you can go toward them, you know what they're going to get to them, and they're going to battle hard, and they will give whoever the shooters are the ball at the right time, and not even ask, not even look for thanks or anything on it.
Yeah.
He is vital, as is Kevin Moran. Kevin Moran is probably a little bit more pacey. You know, he can take on his man a lot more, a little bit different to Brick Walsh, but they definitely complement each other and the way they play together as a unit in the forward line.
There's a huge value, Damien, in moving a fella who's played in the defence, like Brian Corcoran is the great example, where they go up there to full forward. They don't have an ego for scoring and stuff like that. They're just there as team players. So their ball winning ability from centre back is invaluable in the full forward line. And then they're using the option of bringing other people into play. Like, I mean, there's an awful lot of sense to that.
Yeah, and then you know all the tricks of the trade as well. And that's the big thing was that the Brick was. And he played in the backs, he played in midfield, now he's in the forwards, now he happens to be going in around the full forward line area. And as you said, he's all the leadership qualities of him. He's a good lad, he's a fierce, nice fella. But just a piece of useless information for you about the Brick, whatever reason for it is, he wears two pairs of shorts.
Does he?
During matches. He does. So the next, when you're watching him now the next day, unless he's listening to this podcast now and he decides not to, but he wears two pairs of shorts, and maybe the first pair that he is under on is the very first pair of shorts he wore when he was playing for Watford back in, was it 2000? And what year did he say he started?
2004 he started.
2004, yeah. So he wears two pairs of shorts. So we've heard of lads wearing two pairs of socks, and I remember Brendan Cummins used to wear a Man United jersey underneath his goalie jersey or whatever. But yeah, the Brick wears two pairs of shorts. I've often noticed when he's holding for Waterford, and often wondered. So maybe if Brick gets man of the match on Sunday, you can ask him that question, Colin. What is the story?
Yeah,
you know, people want to know.
We must get him on the show sometimes. Definitely something. I've never heard of it doubling up your shorts.
Jeez, I found it hard enough to get one pair of shorts that fit me, never mind wearing two. Jeez.
I wonder, would it be something to do with drying the grip on your hurley to have the shorts underneath a bit drier or something?
That's a non-hurler question now. My God.
I'm not a hurling person. I'm just an innocent here. That's all. But when you are do you get towels thrown into you randomly to dry the grip or something like that, or on a wet day? Is that, or do you go to the sideline and get help there, or is it just the grips are so good that you don't need that kind of stuff?
You do, of course. Lads, the lads are carrying the water as a towel with them, and basically if it was a wet day, they'd run in and out with the water, and you'd hand you the towel. If you want to use it, you'd use it. If you didn't want to use it, you wouldn't. And then you have the resin, that if it was very wet, you'd put resin on your hand so that your hand would be a little bit drier, so that it wouldn't be slipping off the grip.
Right,
Colin, you can blow it out of proportion if you want, but it's if you need a towel, you'll go up and you'll dry your hands and dry your grip in this. So,
yeah, I was told years ago to try this during the summer, to put Lucozade on your hands, and your hands would get so sticky that the football would completely stick to your hands. So I tried it one day and I poured the Lucozade all over it. All that happened was my fingers all stuck together. I couldn't get them apart. So like, I mean, this is a disaster. It was only a challenge game I tried it for, thank God.
It's a good excuse not to pass, isn't it?
Yeah, it was stuck to the Lucozade on my hands. Lads, listen, we'll talk about Cork here quickly, and we've mentioned all the young fellas. Like, I mean, there's no doubt the average age is so young. There is that fear of them freezing on the big day. There's no doubt about that. But am I right in saying Cork's last appearance in an All-Ireland semi-final was a hammering by Tipperary? You know, they haven't been in an All-Ireland semi-final in a few years. They have got five fellas who wouldn't have played in Croke Park at this level. They're coming up against a team that they know is going to probably completely change their tactics. So, you know, it's an awful lot of unknown for Cork coming into this.
Yeah, there is an awful lot of unknown. But, on the other side of things, those young lads have nothing to fear. They've played Waterford. They know these Waterford lads. They went to college with them. They know there's nothing really new. While if it was like maybe a Galway or a Kilkenny that they're facing, or a Tipperary, you know, we wouldn't know each other so well. Those young lads, like, they're on top form at the minute. They shouldn't fear it, and they should really, you know, relish going into Croke Park, relish that, and there's going to be a full house. They should nearly take that Keady attitude where they're going, look, people have seen me playing so well down in Munster, now I can't wait to show everyone else up here to show how really can I explode in Croke Park, because that's everyone needs. When they were growing up and we were all growing up, it's getting to Croke Park and performing on the big days in Croke Park, and you know, them lads should be really absolutely mad for it on the weekend, and I'm sure they will, and there's no reason to say that they're going to freeze, but look, young
it's
lads,
the worry, yeah,
young lads do sometimes do that, but you know, Cork always come with this kind of a swagger at this late stage in the championship, and you know, even their supporters believe, you know, think that nothing can faze them and nothing will get in their way, and I really feel that playing Waterford will probably nearly help them to a degree. I know they might face a different Waterford, but because they have played each other so many times, that it'll kind of nearly help that those young lads, that look, that there's nothing new here, you know, it's going to be a different stadium, it's going to be a better stadium, better pitch, so look, even play better than you can and go and express yourselves, because there's nothing to fear playing Waterford.
Yeah, and they've been very lucky this year, Damien. They haven't had any injuries. Their starting 15 has been the same, I'm pretty sure, in saying in all their three Munster Championship games. Now, I know they moved their forwards around a little bit, so positional changes might move around, but they've been very lucky with the 15 that they have. They haven't had to change it around.
So very, very lucky, Colin. Same 15 started the last three games, and I predicted the same 15 he's going to go with the winning form as well, as you know. But
yeah,
sure, like, it's like anything, you need a bit of luck, and Cork are having the luck that they're having no injury problems. Maybe that's to do with their top class physical conditioning, that they're in super condition, that they're able to take the knocks and able to take the belts, and they've done all the you know, the proper rehab and everything all like that. But you know, just going on with the young lads on Sunday, like, how will they react? It's like this, Colin. If Cork are expecting these five young lads to win them the match on Sunday, well, then they're not going to win the match. The five young lads will pull on, like, and they will come in with all the leaders, right? But you can't be expecting the five young lads to carry the ship. Cork, if they're going to win on Sunday, need their leaders to come to the fore. And when I speak about the leaders, I'm talking now about the Nashes in goals, Callahan at full-back, you've got Ellis at centre-back, right? Then you've got Lehan, you've got Callaghan, Harnedy and Horgan, right? They're their main leaders, right? And they're the boys that need to really step up to the plate if Cork are to get to an All-Ireland. And if they step up to the plate, right, what'll happen is the young lads will follow through. The young lads will start getting a little bit more confident, bring the lads along, start encouraging them, and that's the way it works. So by all means, the five young lads have a massive role to play, but it's the main players on this squad, the leaders, that have to really drive this Cork team forward on Sunday to win this match.
Yeah, we talked about this before, and it's the variety that Cork have up front, that it's so hard to mark, that you'll have man, you might have, usually teams have two good sticky man markers, you know, they're usually their cornerbacks, but Cork attack is so heavy on scoring power. You know, you need four good man markers to mark these lads, because only Meade, really, outside of Meade, is a more of a worker, but the other five are heavy scorers if they're not kind of marked tightly.
Yeah, and have been heavy scorers all this season. But I think a lot will come down to two lads in the forwards that have been really playing well so far, is Conor Lehan. If he can keep that running that he's been doing over and back, and continuing the scoring form that he's been in, I think that's what's been lacking the last couple of maybe seasons for him. He was able to get on the ball, but maybe his end product wasn't the best, but he obviously has been working on it, and he's been a huge leader in that forward line. And then obviously inside, Harnedy, like, Harnedy is one of the best hurlers, that, you know, he's just a joy to watch with his touch and his pace. And but the only thing, he can blow hot and cold a lot, and he has been good so far, and he's a great target man to have in there, because he's great hands, and he's really, really pacey. And if those two lads are on top form, I think it's going to be hard for this Waterford team to hold them.
Yeah, OK, well, we'll move on to predictions here, so lads, because Cork are 8-11, Waterford are 6-4, the handicap is -1, so, like, I mean, the handicap's not really coming into play here. So who are we going for, Conal? I'll start with you here, Cork or Waterford? Good value in Waterford at 6-4 there, you'd have
to
say.
There is. Look, I think,
bearing in mind now, before you talk, the last time they played, I remember we all went for Waterford, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. Look, Cork are obviously on a high coming in, after winning them.
For Cork.
What? Oh, you went for Cork. Okay, we had your sound turned down there. Maybe.
Keep it turned down there.
Excuse me, I went for Cork. Apology, please.
Turn him back down there, Paul.
Yeah, no, look, I think Cork are on a high, obviously, after winning the Munster, coming in, huge talk about them. They've great young lads coming through, and a good blend, and they're playing great hurling. While Waterford, you know, are this is nearly last chance saloon for them. They have a few older lads, you know, as we talked about with Moran and Walsh, and how Austin Gleeson will play. Will he have another stormer as he's been nearly having a lot of the days? How will they deal with Nash's puck outs? There's loads of elements in it, but I would just feel it's time for Waterford to get to an All-Ireland final again. And I would like to see it for a lot of those players individually and the group and Derek McGrath. I just think that, you know, they deserve it from the years that they've entertainment that they've given, and the performances so far in this championship. I think some of them have been, you know, really, really high quality. And, you know, Cork have won Munster, and maybe that's enough for them. Let Waterford go on and get to the All-Ireland final. I don't think anyone bar outside of Cork would begrudge Waterford getting to an All-Ireland.
Yeah, no, me neither. And Jesus, outside of Damien here, who the hell would you support if Waterford played Galway in the final? Like, you'd be rooting for both teams to win. It would be a real weird dynamic. Damien, who are you going to go for in this one?
Oh, it's a very, very hard one to call, Colm. I'm saying to myself that Cork will win, and then I'm saying to myself that Water is something to prove. And I think being Dermot McGrath last year, I think a lot of them players will want to do it for him as well. I'm torn here. I'm saying Cork will win it, and then I'm saying Waterford will. So just because you've asked me to name it, who will win it, I'm going to say Cork, but only just about. I think they're playing a completely different opposition now to this Waterford team that played two months ago. But just, you've asked me to call it, I'm going to say Cork.
Right, okay. For what it's worth, I'll go with Waterford for similar reasons for Conal. I think fate has a lot, often comes into this, and I think that Waterford, after in the third year of three All-Ireland semi-finals, is now or never, and it's almost like, and maybe the edge might be taken off Cork after winning as well, we don't know. Right, we'll be back in a second with some Twitter questions.
After the match with Marty Morrissey and the Marty squad, and you know, the big thing for me yesterday with Clare versus Galway was,
hang on, did you ask permission to do the Marty squad there?
Well, I didn't, but I was only a special guest. Last Thursday you asked me the same question when I started Bubbles, and I said yes to the Marty squad, because yes, I would have started Bubbles for that game yesterday. That was the first I heard of Johnny King coming back with the Galway squad. You know, I was asked just in the Marty squad.
Here, Damien, are you getting paid for Marty squad plugs on our show here?
That's true.
No, I do that completely voluntarily.
He hits it. It's over the bar. Oh, holy Moses! What a match!
Move away from the messing there, lads. Right, we have a serious show to do here. Right.
All right, lads. First Twitter question is from Lorcan Fagan, and he says, "Ask them what do they think about the throw hand pass," and he has a laughy face. Now, the reason I'm pretty sure he's asked me this is a few people tweeted me on Sunday and said that the hand pass from David Burke to Joe Canning for the winning score was a throw. I didn't really notice it myself, but I thought it was an interesting one in that me as a non-hurling person sees throws on the field all the time. Like, I mean, there must be a very fine line between getting that second strike and actually throwing it, or is it a very easy thing to get away with, Conal?
It is a very easy thing to get away with. There is a fine line between that little gap between over the ball and your hand, but I think players have been nearly perfecting it, and some of them are throws, but you know, it's impossible to call. And if you're in a ruck, you know, you will throw it out. Like, I've done it, you've thrown it, and you might get away with it. But if it's you know, if it's an obvious, you know, on your own, and you throw it straight across to someone, well, you know, you have to have a strike in motion. But look, people are getting away with it and more, and it would be outrageous for a referee to have blown it on the weekend and say that was a throw, because there would have been huge investigation into it. And the best thing is just nearly let the game flow, you know, unless it's a complete obvious throw over the shoulder, baseball style. Like,
yeah, usually, actually, funny you mentioned that, over the shoulder throws are the only throws I ever seen getting pulled. If you were going under from under, they're very rarely pulled, even though they could be throws. Do you know that kind of way? So, like, I mean, they have to be very obvious, Damien, if they're going to get called.
Well, that's exactly it. And the first thing just to say there, it wasn't David Burke that gave the hand pass, it was Johnny Cohen.
Oh, was it Johnny Cohen? Sorry.
Just for us to have the incorrect information. But what you call it? But yeah, I'd agree there. You get away with it, So there's, but you're slightly hand passing, you're slightly throwing it, and you'll get away with it in tight margin, but it's very, very seldom ever pulled. So there's, and so lads are getting away with it. So if when it's in tight margins, it you will get away with it. Simple as that. You'll see a good few of the Cork lads, they kind of hand pass the ball that way as well. So they do. So, but yeah, you get away with it. So you do. I've often got away with it myself. So I just thought, I have no problem.
It's not really a skill anyways, is it? No, you know, it the actual hand pass.
It's definitely a skill.
Is it a skill that, yeah, to let it
to give a good
it
hand pass to someone?
No, but to the actual
I disagree with you.
No, the actual technique of doing it.
The hand pass is the most simplest skill that's in the game, Colin. It's not practiced and not perfected enough for training sessions. And the hand pass gets you out of so much trouble. It also brings other players into the game. It shows the vision that you have. And if you're a very good hand passer of the ball, and you're playing, especially up in the forward line, you might maybe score an awful lot, but you could be making 5 or 6 points with simple hand passes. So personally myself, I think it's a skill that isn't perfected and thrown off. And I'll give an example now, Colin, right? If Jason Ford gave a perfect hand pass to Noel McGrath, against Galway. That ball was in the net. It was a poor hand pass. The ball was in front. Ball bounced before Noel got to it. So the hand pass, sometimes the skill of it isn't practiced enough at training, especially with youngsters maybe at junior level. And I think the hand pass has a huge role to play in the modern game of hurling. So, and you can get huge effect and great results out of it when you have a good player that's able to hand pass the ball properly.
Remember DJ Carey used to be hand passing it? He used to be hand passing it like 15, 20, 30 yards, no problem. Now I know he was an exception and because he was great at the handball. But I remember Kevin Fenley was the manager of the team when we came up first, and he started emphasising hand passing, and we were like, what is like going on here? Like, hand passing, can we not do a bit of hurling? And he used to, every train session be started with it, used to be hand passing over and back, over and back.
Oh, God, I said that was boring.
Until a few lads kind of questioned about it, and he went absolutely berserk, and it was like, look, DJ Carey can hand pass at 70 yards because some of you lads can't even puck it that far.
I don't, look, obviously, lads, you might have taken me up wrong. Obviously, your hand pass is a great weapon to have if you do it right. I'm talking about the technique of actually, you know, if they were to say tomorrow, right, you're allowed to throw it, do you know what I mean? Would it make that much of a difference to the technique of it? Do you know, because there's such a fine margin between doing it and it, you know what I mean? A lot of them are throws one way or another.
If they were saying you're allowed to throw it underarm.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I think you'd be able to do it further, like, because you have to have some kind of emotion, you know. As soon as you release your fingers, you know, you have the ball, you release your fingers straight away, and the best hand pass you can give is with your fingers rather than with the actual palm of your hand, because it's more accurate and you get more distance out of it.
Right.
So I don't really know, but look, people are getting away with it, but it's very hard to police. It only happens very, very rarely, and it never happens really when you're going for a score or giving a lad a score. But it is a vital part of the game, and I think you can open up play so much, you can change direction, and it is a hard skill, and it's very hard to perfect.
Okay, we'll leave that one there. Right, here's one that's from Patrick Donnellan. And do you think the GAA will get rid of or amend the rule about interfering with the helmet? It's nonsense at this stage. Now, I think we're all in agreement that it's a very strict rule. But the question here is, do you think the GAA, after everything that's happened this year, we know Anthony Toohey is not going to face any disciplinary action. Thank God, because that would have been absolutely outrageous. But because of the few high profile cases this year, do you think the GAA maybe amend that a little bit to maybe avoid this scenario next year?
I think it's going to be very hard to, you know, obviously we're all against, you know, a confrontation and someone grabbing your helmet and twisting it and pulling it off your head. That's a definite no-no. But it's very hard to, you know, if you're getting away from someone and, you know, you might swing the hand back and you're just trying to push them off, but you might touch their helmet or you might touch them in the face, and that lad goes down and all of a sudden it's a big thing, and oh well, you touched his face, it's a red card, strictly speaking. And so that's what's happening now with Tadhg De Burka, you know. So I think it's going to be very hard to define, you know, what was deliberate, what wasn't deliberate, and I don't know if they're going to change it, to be honest with you.
Right.
You know, if it's in a confrontational one-on-one or something like that, and someone rises the hand or raises your hand to get someone's face guard, that's the problem. But during open play, when something happens and you're both going for the ball, you know, you might get entangled, and that doesn't deserve a red card.
Yeah, maybe if you could bring in a yellow for, you know, stuff like the burkas, and then it has to be a very obvious dangerous one for red. You know, maybe all of them, Damien, seem to be a red rather than there's no option to give a yellow for a helmet thing. Like the Toohey thing was outrageous, really, for that even to be highlighted.
But see, it was highlighted because fans emailed and tweeted in to get the Sunday game to highlight it, hoping that that will help for the Borca's appeal. Right, so I agree 100% with you with the Adrian Toohey thing, but look at the long and short of it is that there's a big difference between two lads going for a ball and colliding with helmets or hands get, you know, messed up in the helmet, than a lad going toward another guy and ripping the face guard off his helmet. They're completely different things altogether, you know, and the GAA need to have that concept and tell it to the referees that, look, if a lad touches another guy's helmet and there's no malice in it and maybe they're competing for a ball or one trying to get rid of the other lad to make room for himself, right, that's okay. But if a lad goes over to another guy and he's challenging for a ball and he rips the face guard off him, that can be dangerous, whatever, yes, that's a red card, and that's where the referees need to come in and maybe stand up for themselves and say, look, like, I don't agree with this rule, this doesn't make sense at all. So look, there's a big difference, but Everton they should just have a little bit of cop on, that's all.
Yeah. But you see, the referees, I suppose, are hamstrung as in that's what's said in the rules. So there's not really an awful lot they can do. Yeah, and it's obviously Adrian Toohey. Anthony.
But the referees should have, you know, their own little opinion on the matters as well, because sometimes they'd know best as well, as opposed to maybe the authorities of the GAA, whoever is the referee in authority, to say, look, that doesn't really make sense. There should be a room here for a little bit of error here for us, you know, or a little bit to play with. No, yeah. Just the refs should give back their feedback. They probably do, but just, you know, it's. I feel sorry for the Borca. That's all I'm saying. You know, I just feel sorry for the fella. That's all. Just with this whole helmet incident, I think it's stupid.
But on the other side, I suppose, from the GA and things, people are saying there's too much grey area. You know, and the referees, there's too much grey area for referees to make their own opinion on things. You know, but. It's the same in every game you go out to. You'll ask who the ref is, and you'll know. Oh well, he likes to let it go. You can get away with a bit of extra hair, so let's get away with it. You know, and that's the stuff we're trying to get rid of. We're trying to just, you know, standardise the whole lot of it. But it's very hard, and especially when you have something like this, you know, it'll come down to the opinion of the referee, no matter what happens. If there's some kind of a tangle, you know, you can get in a tangle with someone, and you can still know what you're doing, like to pull the helmet off and keep going. It's the same as you see it so many times. You know, you're coming out with a first touch, and you can, you know, a lad is trying to tackle, and you'll swing back to try and push him back, but you know you're going to hit him with the hurl, so you swing back and you give him a smack, and you know you feel good for that second for giving him a smack, but the heel go down, and your referee would say, "Oh no, it's part of the hurl, just flew back."
But you're letting on that you didn't know he was there.
Yeah. There is ways and means about it, but it is a very grey area, and like, mate, that's what hurling is, and it's very hard to get a referee, you know, to standardise all referees. They'll all have their own version on it, and I don't know how that's going to change, but it's some parts of the game are suffering because of it.
Right, okay, listen, Damien, this one's for you, and we'll keep this one short. Who does Damien feel Galway would prefer to play in the final? Presumably Cork in an orthodox battle as against the more tactical Waterford.
God, it's who would Galway prefer to play? I'd say they prefer to play Cork
in a hurl, like in a.
I said it before. I think I said it in the newspaper article about 2 or 3 years ago. Galway don't fear Cork, and I think in a 15-on-15, I think Galway would fancy themselves highly. But I'll come out and I'll say this, and I go, I think Galway are going to win the All Ireland. That's what I think. I think it's their year, so I do. And I think it's now or never. And they're going to do it. Galway are going to win the All Ireland. Yeah. So they're playing for an All Ireland semi final on Sunday to get to an All Ireland between Cork and Waterford. But I think it's going to be irrelevant. I think Galway are going to be too strong for both these teams. But you're asking a question. I think they would prefer to play Cork in an orthodox 15-on-15, whereas opposed to playing Waterford would have a sweeper, which would be something that mightn't be off. Then again, that's wrong. They are used to it because they played against Wexford.
Yeah.
Who played a sweeper? So that is, I'd say they prefer to play Cork.
Okay, last one here, lads. This is from Jamie Wall. We know Jamie, former Cork hurler. We have genuinely, what he says here is, genuinely think this is the worst tradition in the GAA and should be dispensed with ASAP. Despised it as a losing player, cliches and poop talk. What he's talking about here is managers coming into the losing dressing room to have a few words. Now, this was a conversation I was having with Jamie and one or two other fellas on Twitter, and it was coming from Andrew McLaughlin, who played with Kildare, thinks he really likes that tradition. Now, I was saying it's all right at inter-county level where Brian Cody comes in or Anthony Daly will go into the losing team. And I remember with Mikko, you'd hear this huge rupturous round of applause because Mikko would be going in to tell them. But at club level, I despised it. Like, if some fella you don't like coming in with a smirk, maybe saying, oh, well, hard luck, lads. And I'd go into the shower, I wouldn't even. And then your own teammates give out to you, come in and pay a bit of respect. And I'm like, shut up and don't be annoying me. And then there's all this. Like, what's your thoughts on it? Like, you know, whether it's a tradition that should stay going or is it a little bit outdated now?
I used to like it at Intercounty. You know, it's always nice to hear the pre-others, only in Championship, not in League. You don't hear them in League coming in, but you know, it's nice just to hear, you know, usually they give a little thoughts on the game and whatever they say. Look, that's nice tradition, it's something different. Club level, it can depend on the character of the managers themselves. Some managers, as you said, will go in and just purposely say something absolutely silly and just rile up the other team when there's no need to say that, you know. While other managers will go in and they're really good, they're really respectful, and what they say is really genuine. But it is a tradition, and look, I don't see any huge thing against it, really, to be honest with you. But sometimes you have like the manager, a selector, and then the captain, like, you know, going in. So there's three people going in and they're all, one person says something and then the other lad will have to say something, and then the captain says, nearly just round summarises what he says. There's no need for any of that. I think just the manager go in if he wants to go in, and sometimes you feel like you have to as a team to go in. But I'm not sure too much at club level, but definitely inter-county, I don't see a big issue with it, because it's a little bit more organised, it's a little bit more monitored. What, you know, there's not going to be, even if he says something that he shouldn't be saying, there's going to be people there to hold it back, because I've seen it get a little bit awkward in some situations when the manager is saying things, you know, against certain players on the other team, you know, and it just doesn't sit right. And it's easy at that stage when you're disappointed, you have nothing to lose, you're out of the championship, to say something back or to stand up and, you know, whatever. And I've seen that happen too.
And then your own players will turn on those lads, and then there's this kind of argument that there's no real need for it.
There's not. But look, I don't think there's any issue with inter-county, but club teams and at club level, there could be a bit of an issue. And not every team does it anyway, to be honest.
Yeah, it doesn't always happen.
You know,
what do you think, Damien? Being the traditionalist that you are, I'm sure you like it.
It's a tradition that'll always be there, Con. No matter what we say in this podcast, it'll always be there, and it'll just continue on. So, and sometimes you'd say it's yourself, right, when a manager will come in, you go, oh, can't stand this letter, or geez, you know, I thought that I didn't come in or whatever. And look, at that's only just being honest, because that has happened to us all or whatever. Or maybe you could have had words with him, or he could have hurled out instructions to your man to do, you know.
Yeah.
He's coming in telling you what great lads you are and wishing the best luck. But look, at I still think we can say it, but that tradition will be there for with the GAA, it'll be there for a long, long time.
Here's another tradition I want to get your thoughts on. I don't know if this is just a Laois thing, but in Laois, when you win a county title, the losing team comes in to drink with ye on the Monday night, and then ye go and drink in their club on the following Friday night. Is that just a Laois thing, or does that...
Doesn't happen in Dublin.
Doesn't it?
Guarantee that doesn't happen in Dublin, no way.
Does it happen in Galway?
In Galway, yeah. It doesn't happen on the Friday night, but... So, just say over the years, when Portumna won a county final on a Sunday, it was tradition that the losing team would come over to them on the Monday night, and you would have a couple of drinks for them, and you'd have sandwiches, and both players mingle and all that. And look, it all sounds great, but look, it doesn't always end up well.
No, it's,
you know, and lads are on the beer, and like, one lad might say something to another lad, and you know, and now, not that it never happens down in Portumna, but I think it's the most stupidest tradition going, because obviously nothing after losing a county final, and you're hurt and you're disappointed, you mightn't have played one in 10 years, it might be the first time your club was in, or maybe you were trying to win the first one and you're to lose, and like, your emotions are high and you're disappointed and you have a few drinks, and like, some lad says something to you, and I just think it's absolutely stupid. I think it's ridiculous. You know, it's probably a tradition that's in many counties, but I personally don't agree with it. And furthermore, do you want
to be chatting the lad that you're marking. You know, in the county final, and you're playing cornerback and you're operating corner forward, and he's giving it to you with the hurl, and he's doing whatever it has to do to win a county medal from. I think it's a stupid tradition. I don't like it at all.
No, it's madness. And, like, I mean, I think I've lost two county titles, and it's safe to say I didn't go anywhere near the other team's clubhouse the following night. But there would be a bit of pressure on you. Come on, go.
And how many county medals have you?
Six.
You won six and lost two.
I won six and lost two, yeah. I'd be on about 14 now if I hadn't left. I think yeah. Actually...
Colin, how many of you, Colin?
I think I'm eight or nine. Between football and hurling, yeah.
Two footballs, six or seven hurling.
Yeah.
See, it's not bad, but you two have all-earning clubs. That's the one killer.
That's never too late, yeah.
It probably is, yeah. Unless it's their intermediate All-Irelands, maybe, something like that. Anyways, listen, this is probably a conversation we can have when we finish the podcast here. That's all we have time for. We'll be back on Monday, probably with JJ and Paddy, to review the All-Ireland semi-final. We'll talk to you then. Good luck.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going. So it opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are on the... We're trying hard to make it through, but it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know, and it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.